and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchlist.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined on the other end by Nick Pollock. And I got to say, Nick, I see you in this, what looks to be an incredibly comfortable pitcherless sweatshirt.
Ooh.
And I don't have one of those.
No, you don't.
No, you don't, Eric.
And that is a problem. Yeah. We can get one for you. Okay. And this is a gorgeous zip up. Yep. That is pitcherless in the corner. It's very warm. It's actually my apartment is a little cold today.
Well, yeah, because it's 17 degrees in New York City. So yeah, that'll do it.
But you know what warms me up, Eric? Knowing baseball? That it's your birthday tomorrow.
Oh, yes. That warms me up too. You tend to not care as much. It's not a milestone birthday. It's just another year older.
Well, I mean, you're going to turn 35 and we're really excited for Eric. Sure. And everybody, of course, please reach out to Eric Smolsky and, sure, you know, wish him a happy birthday because it's a busy month or two ahead for us.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And of course, also, my son decided he wanted to give everybody a cough and a runny nose in the house. And so we're dealing with that as well.
But
we're powering through. It's the winter. That's just it's par for the course.
Oh, my God.
And I am so, you know, I wouldn't say I'm injured, you know, but I'm not operating at 100%. And that is super relevant for today because we're going to talk about injured starting pitchers.
What a segue.
This is a topic that I think is, I don't want to say near and dear to my heart, but I think it's a topic that has become increasingly interesting to me and I think to us because we've discussed it a lot. And part of like the lessons that we learned at the end of last year heading into this year was maybe that we were looking through rose colored glasses at some of these injuries and banking on returns a little more aggressively than maybe we should. So we are going to go through starting pitchers who are coming into this year injured in a variety of ways. We have three tiers, which we'll talk about. And Nick and I are going to just talk through our general thoughts on those pitchers, either the group as a whole or the individual pitcher, what types of pitchers you can take risks on, when in a draft you might want to take a risk, what type of pitcher is worth that risk. And just so we are clear here, we are going to be operating here strictly talking about redraft leagues, not keeper, where like you might draft a pitcher who's coming back in June and then you get to keep him at a reduced cost and next year. We're going strictly redraft, no keeper here. What are our thoughts on this pitcher for 2026? Where would we draft him for 2026, etc.?
Yeah. And something that I want to do is really highlight the table that I had at the beginning of last year, which is every week on the list, I have my injured starters and I say where they would be if they were healthy. And I love looking back at the one right before the 2025 season, just so we can get some perspective of how often these hit or not. And these are the ones that were drafted with the expectation of them appearing soon. And that was Spencer Strider. It was Shane McClanahan, George Kirby, even Shohei Ohtani, and Lucas Giolito. And I guess George Kirby was the only one that paid off for that. Mm-hmm. Even though he missed more time, I believe, than we expected him to. And then you had guys like Woodruff, Darvish, Jared Jones, Grayson Rodriguez, Eury Pérez, Sawyer Gibson-Long, Kyle Bradish, Cutter Crawford, Brian Bello, Clark Schmidt, Ranger Suarez, Cody Bradford, Shane Bieber, Luis Gil, Sean Manaea, Christian Javier, Ryan Weathers, and Tobias Myers. And of all of those, the only ones that really worked, well, one is Ranger Suarez, which was just, he came back at the beginning of May and was absurd. But the only ones that really hit were Eury and Bradish and Bieber, who were Tommy John guys, who were also previously elite. So there's that category. And then if it's outside of that, and it's something else outside of like just straight up Tommy John, it didn't really work out.
Yeah.
Maybe Brandon Woodruff eventually too, I should say. But that was
a long wait.
That was a long way, and he wasn't really getting drafted as a last tier stash,
right. You
know? So I want to keep that in mind as perspective of just what these injury dings mean. And if there are those concerns happening in February and March where you're drafting someone that, oh, they should be back in like 2-3 weeks, avoid, probably. it's a really, really tough gamble.
Yeah. Those mid-spring, late spring injuries, you know, I would just say when we get into them, approach them all as if they're being undersold. So every time a team is like, oh, he'll be fine. He'll miss a couple weeks and, you know, come back. Expect it to be a month. Expect it to be 5 weeks, whatever it is. And so, you know, and then expect that pitcher, like the Sean Manias of the world. It was a back injury. It's not a big deal. And like he wasn't the same pitcher last year. And maybe it was injury, whatever. So the ones that we don't even know yet, the ones that we're not talking about, the ones that will pop up, if they pop up in the middle of spring, just, I would say, be overly cautious. And if that means you're just waiting and using a last round pick and hoping they're healthy at the start of the year, cool. But like, you know, you gotta adjust. So our three tiers here, our three groupings, we have starting pitchers who missed essentially all of 2025, but are on track to return for opening day as of now. We have starting pitchers who we know will miss the start of 2026. And then we have a third group, which is could be healthy in spring, unclear. And so this is for guys who pitched at least a good portion of innings last year, suffered injuries, are on track to come back at the start of spring, could come back at the start of spring. It's a little bit more nebulous, but none of these injuries were not the like full year long recovery type of injuries that we're dealing with. So we're going to jump right in with a pitcher I drafted far too much of last year. Shane McClanahan. Shane McClanahan, who was pitching in spring training after missing all of 2024 with Tommy John surgery, or the vast majority. And so he then had a nerve issue. And so he was sidelined. Yes, Shane McClanahan missed all of 2024, just for correction purposes. So he hasn't pitched since 2023. He was dealing with a nerve injury that they downplayed. But then that nerve injury required season-ending surgery in August. And they believe that he is going to pitch 2026, start of the year.
Yeah.
We haven't seen this guy for 2 years. So that's an added element of like, I don't really know what to expect. How are you approaching Shane McClanahan? Is there something you want to see? If he looks fully healthy in spring, how fully bought back in are you? Where are you sitting with him?
Well, I'll say this. I don't think that anyone's going to be drafting Shane McClanahan inside the top 20, right? You really can't do that. And when it comes to starting pitchers this year, I'd say it's around like 30, 35, something like that, where it starts to become, okay, there are warts and, you know, I do feel more confident that you hold on to them for the rest of the year, but it's not with the same ceiling as you would get with others. And I don't really want to jump into this. I think there's a massive fear with it. But honestly, if he's going on a normal schedule with the Rays, and one of the things you can see in the spring is how teams are utilizing their starters, who they expect them to be, who they're being paired with. And if McClanahan's acting just like Pepio, for example, then that's a phenomenal sign. And I would imagine that we'll see if he's, I don't know, he's probably going to ramp up a little through the spring. He's not going to be amazing right away. But when McClanahan is on the mound, it won't hurt you, is what I'm trying to get at. I think there's a bigger distinction between that and some other injured guys we'll talk about where, well, maybe they're not actually of quality. McClanahan will be of quality. And a nerve compression issue doesn't, to me, I mean, I could be very wrong in this. Please let me know. It doesn't seem as severe as other things. And I can imagine from Tommy John that the surgery wasn't perfect and it caused this and that it's been corrected. And he's fully ready, says Mark Tompkin of the Tampa Bay Times. So I'm feeling okay about it, but yeah. I don't know where to rank him right now.
I'm in the same boat as you. I think the nerve issue was more problematic when he was trying to pitch through it. The nerve issue that he then had surgery to fix, to remedy. Now you're like, okay, we're not dealing with a torn this. We're not dealing with a you know, a flexor, this or that or whatever. Now, he is a year further removed from Tommy John surgery. We have talked about the Tommy John honeymoon, which he missed a large portion of because he's dealing with another injury. And to be clear, there is no indication whatsoever from anybody that the nerve issue is at all connected to the Tommy John issue. Hmm. They should be treated as totally separate things. So, yeah, like there now might be a little more risk of a re-injury to the elbow than there would have been if he was throwing last year. But at the winter meetings, they said he was having a really good offseason and he's healthy. At the winter meetings, the Rays president of baseball operations said, if everything goes the way we expect, he has a day in the rotation. And it says, and we take care of him. He'll be the pitcher he's worked so hard to be and was prior. So to me, that's like, he has his spot. He has his day.
Right.
Now we'll take care of him. Doesn't say, hey, we're going to, you know, it might be, that's five innings at the start of the season.
Yep.
But I like he's got a day. He's got his day in the rotation. Tells me he's going to be on a regular schedule. And they might not push him deep into games. It might be like a little bit of like a Drew Rasmussen last year.
Right, that's the first name that people think of with this McShane situation.
But how good for fantasy purposes was Drew Rasmussen still? Like, he was still very good even at five innings. And so McClanahan can be that. And so if he is in spring and he looks like the pitcher we've seen him to be, I am willing to draft him. I am not going to make the mistake of saying, I'm going to draft him as my SP2 and he could be a surprise ace, which is what I did prior to the nerve issue. He's not going to need to go that high, but I'm willing to draft him, and you know, we'll see when the ADP comes in. Like, I can't imagine he's going to be in the top 200 picks.
That's interesting. I mean, I wonder what it'll be in March. That's really the thing to me.
It's going to be what happens after that first perform. If he comes out first spring, boom, 95 from the left side. It's going to be, he might go higher. I think because we haven't seen him in 2 years, there's going to be natural apprehension across the board.
Absolutely.
So I don't imagine like he skyrockets, but I think he'll get a bump if he looks healthy. And I think it'll be a warranted bump.
I don't know what to do with it because I'm trying as much as I can really to say, look, Nick, just avoid as much risk as you can. There are enough pitchers to go around. You don't need to take a chance in for it to hit to win your fantasy league, right? A lot of that, you know, when it comes to me personally, my best skill set is getting value off of the wire in season. So why would I want to set myself up that I need to do more of that, get a foundation and then go higher, right? And on the other side, if I really had to tell you like right now how I felt about it, my instinct, and maybe it's just me wish casting with it, but yeah, Shane McClanahan is going to be great.
Yeah.
You're going to wish they had Shane McClanahan. So I really need to assess the 30s and say of my SP rankings and say, all right, of these, like which are on the same level as McClanahan as far as like expected innings as well. And if I had this guy, would I feel like just great? I have this and I'm all set. What are the warts? How big are they? What am I overlooking? It's going to be really difficult. And I have not yet done this with any of these starters. I have not actually ranked them because I still have them in that tier of they're injured and we'll find out more later. Well, it's later and we still haven't gotten much information. We need like another month. Yeah. So I don't know what to do. And we've taken a long time on Shane McClanahan. I'm excited to talk about him more later.
Yeah, he's the one I think that was always going to be the most discussion because it's the most confusing situation.
And of course, the highest ceiling.
Yeah. I will say, just like at first blush, if you ask me right now, I can't see a situation where I draft him as one of my top three starting pitchers on a fantasy team. I think if I feel good about my top three arms, I would start to get interested in McClanahan if he looks good in the spring at that kind of like starting pitcher 4 or 5 area. And again, We'll discuss more in March.
Absolutely.
Another pitcher here missed the whole season is Grayson Rodriguez, who was then traded to the Los Angeles Angels. So we have two things here. We have moving to a worse team context. I mean, just point blank, it's a worse team context. It's a worse team, and it is a team that has not shown itself able to develop starting pitching.
And not just that, they were significantly the worst team by outs above average defensively last year. But I mean, I think it was like a negative 57. It was demonstrably just bad. And right, as you mentioned, I don't have confidence in this crew. So it makes you think the Orioles, they're like, we'll just take Taylor Ward and get something for this, which seems awfully suggestive of something being truly wrong with Grayson.
Right. And also, just to your point, the left side of the infield, or not the left side, actually, because Zach Neto is there. But right now, the projected infield around Neto and Nolan Shanuel at first is Vaughn Grissom, who the Angels got from the Red Sox, who is not a good defender at second base. And then Christian Moore, who is their top second base prospect, who could have to move to third base, a position I'm not sure that he's really played much of at all. Or Oswald Peraza wins a spot. So I don't know that the infield defense is going to get much better. So you have that aspect. And then you also have the fact that it's like so many injuries for Grayson Rodriguez. The actual season-ending surgery that he had in August was to remove, it's called a right elbow debridement surgery, which is kind of like a bone chip, right? You're removing a loose body in your elbow. But he dealt with elbow soreness early in the year and then had a lat strain, which required a cortisone injection. And then while he was rehabbing the lat injury was when his elbow discomfort returned. But he also had a lat strain in 2024 and he had a lat strain in 2022. So now we have 3 years since 2022 where he's missed significant time with a lat strain. And he's coming off this bone spur surgery in the elbow. So even if your argument is, hey, bone spurs, whatever, like that happens all the time with pitchers, he'll be fine. This is a guy who has repeated lat injuries as well. And also on top of that, has not actually fulfilled the promise of himself as a prospect. We've seen flashes of it, but not seen a consistent season where you're like, yeah, this guy is an ace.
Yeah, he's not the kind of thing I want to chase whatsoever. It seems like that fool's gold of almost like Alex Reyes back in the day. This could be the year. This is it. We saw that hint before. And, you know, maybe he's all good and healthy now. And I just can't do it. I'm fine. Last pick. Sure. Let's just see what happens. But it seems pretty clear that there's a lot going on here with Grayson Rodriguez. Yeah. And I do want to remind y'all that Grayson, I had high hopes for, but it was still something that he needed to put it together still. It wasn't right. Like it was a finished product that, okay, just be that same thing and you're amazing. That's not the case with Grayson Rodriguez.
Yeah.
So it's all that combined just does not make me encouraged.
I'm going to throw a curveball at you because it's somebody that we didn't put on the list, but he's on Grayson Rodriguez's team. And he missed all of last year, and he might be in the starting rotation, and it's Alek Manoah. And I'm wondering if there's any world where you are okay taking a gamble on Alek Manoah.
I mean, sure. Like, I have no problem with any pick you guys want to make in, like, the 22nd, 23rd round of your drafts.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine, maybe. Maybe Alek Manoah finds his command again of his sinker inside and four-seamer up and slider. Like, that's possible. I have zero faith.
Yeah. I would love to spend my last, I just want to tell you, I would love to spend my last round pick on Alek Manoah. Like I would, but something needs to happen for me to want to do that. But like 2022, he was really, really good. And he was a very good prospect. And very clearly he's been battling injuries and like he's only 28 years old. If crazier things have, he becomes just kind of like a solid end of rotation arm. I'm rooting for him. And so I would love to say, hey, I'm going to take this gamble, but it probably won't break that way, but you know, good for him.
Probably not now.
Fingers. Another pitcher that you and I have historically liked more than the consensus, I believe, is Joe Musgrove. And Joe Musgrove missed all of 2025. He had Tommy John surgery in October of 2024. So he missed all of 2025. He was throwing bullpens at the end of the year, but he never got in any games. And he also didn't return. I'm checking my work right here, but he also did not return for any minor league innings. So we did not see Joe Musgrove in a game setting, even though he was throwing bullpens. And is expected to be fully healthy at the start of last year, or sorry, start of this year, in 99 and two thirds innings in 2024 with the Padres, 3.88 ERA, and a essentially 25% strikeout rate, which is kind of just Joe Musgrove. That's who he's been for the entirety of his career. The Padres should be a pretty decent team. Could you see yourself taking flyers on Joe Musgrove?
I mean, sure. I don't think I'm going to do it at the same cost that everyone else would be. One of the tenets that I'm trying to stick to is not going for pitchers who did not return fully and play in MLB games the year before. And the reasoning behind that, I mean, outside of just the data that we've seen and how like Jacob deGrom did it for three games and what do you know, there was great. And Shane Bieber did it before he did 200 innings in that season and so on and so forth. Is that it allows you to have the proper offseason. You're not playing catch up. You're actually just normal now. And we don't have that yet for Joe Musgrove. Also, I would say he was on the decline before. And I think it's, we're just trying to get back to exactly that. It's fine, but it's not stellar.
Yeah.
So you have that, the cap ceiling with it. And then you also have, of course, the aspect of what is it actually going to be? That just has me moving away from Joe Musgrove.
Yeah, I think if Joe Musgrove's, if your version of Joe Musgrove was, hey, this is a rock solid, like 3.7, 3.8 ERA, 24% strikeout rate on a good team. And that's what he was before the injury. And that was like something we were interested in for that kind of like safety. And now you're taking that and you are saying that he's going to be 33 years old and he's going to be a full year after missing a full year. So you're regressing him from what was essentially a 3.8 ERA pitcher with a 24% strikeout rate. So is he a 4 ERA pitcher with like a 21% strikeout rate? And then you're just kind of like, what's the upside here? If I'm in a deeper format, sure. If I'm in a deeper format and I'm filling my rotation, and I'm thinking maybe I get 140, 150 innings of a 3.9, 4 ERA on a good team. Like there is some value in that kind of boring production. But right. I can't see really chasing that in a 12 team.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like the kind of play to make.
Yeah.
Again, the cap ceiling to me. It's possible that he is able to get the full feel for his secondaries. Fastball's always been a weird thing with him, and he's kind of been a stuffed McNasty in his career of questionable fastballs, but then really good secondaries. And it just doesn't seem right to me that he'll just have these 20% swing strike rate secondaries again. And I don't want to go for it.
Yeah. I know that you do kind of want to go for the next pitcher, and we'll get to who he is after the break. Now, I will say this is somebody you talked about on our like super sleeper show. So this is guys who are being drafted like after pick like 400, 500 currently right now. But you had interest in Reynaldo Lopez, who pitched one game last year, never returned. We never saw him again. This is a situation for you where like you would take a gamble super late. Are you more inclined to gamble on him than Joe Musgrove, though?
No.
Okay.
No. A great distinction. I'm happy you said that. I probably would, though, more than Grayson. I think I have a little bit more faith in also how Atlanta will just like let him start. And I feel like that's cool.
Sure.
But yeah, Reynaldo Lopez, he had an insane year in 2024 and got hurt in the first after the first game in 2025. And we haven't seen him since. I mean, why not? Let's just give it a chance. I know fastball, slider, curve, and the slider and curve weren't getting enough strikes before. That was my big concern entering last year before even the injury. And yet, it still can be very productive for you. I'm just curious where he's at right now.
Yeah. I I was always intrigued by him, but I never like, I didn't buy in and I missed a lot of the production. I mean, I bought it in like a few places early when he had his good year, but I wasn't like a believer, quote unquote. And so the injury on top of it is going to make it harder for me to jump back in, but you know, we'll see how he looks in spring. You know, I agree with you that they're going to let him go a little bit and let him start. These last three guys I'm going to lump together. I think most of them are going to go undrafted in a lot of formats, but I just wanted to throw it out there because there's a chance that all of these guys could actually win a spot in their starting rotations. So the first is Braxton Garrett of the Marlins. Obviously, the Marlins are trading away starting pitchers, and so there potentially is a spot for him. He missed all of last year after having Tommy John surgery. Josiah Gray, who also missed last year with Tommy John surgery, but did return to throw 5 2/3 innings in the minor leagues. Not a lot of innings, but we saw him on a professional mound in a game setting at the end of 2025. So that's better than what we can say for some of these other guys. And then Cutter Crawford, who was out with a knee injury, so not an arm injury, but missed all of last season. The Red Sox have a very deep rotation right now, and so there's a chance he doesn't win a spot, but maybe they make trades. Any of these three guys intrigue you at all?
No. I mean, maybe Cutter Crawford like a little bit. I'm curious also if Josiah Gray can really take advantage of maybe the flat attack angle or the secondaries that he had. Braxton Garrett could be a volume arm for Miami, and there might be some 15-team relevance there he has in the past. But I don't have any expectations for any of these three to be guys that we want to add. And be careful with Josiah Gray. I mean, that was home run city before.
Yeah.
Cutter Crawford finally came into his namesake in that 2024 season, but inefficient and does not like pitching in Fenway. So I would say if any of them, it would be Braxton Garrett as a streamer type little bit, but not in my drafts. I don't want Braxton Garrett, Cutter Crawford, or Josiah Gray.
I think Cutter Crawford is going to be the most impactful of the three, and I think he's going to be a multi-inning reliever for the Red Sox. So I don't think you're going to want any of them on your fantasy team. And so I'm with you. I'm not really diving in on any of those guys. Nice. We're going to move to our next tier here, which is pitchers who we know will miss the start of 2026. There is no chance that these guys are in the rotation at the start of the season. So I'm going to list them all, and then you can jump in wherever and let me know either general thoughts or if there's any of these pitchers in particular who you'd be more inclined to take a gamble on. Okay. So there's Gerrit Cole, Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler, Justin Steele, Jared Jones, Carlos Rodon, Grant Holmes, Jackson Job, Max Meyer, Clark Schmidt, and DJ Herz.
Okay, so Zach Wheeler is the weird one. We don't know that. I mean, it's like June is the expectation, I think, right now. Nebraska had a quote, I think.
It was like originally August when it first happened. And then they're like, oh, maybe May or June. I'm like, how did that just shift?
It is interesting just to kind of reflect on the impact of these, of Suds coming back from Tommy John or significant injuries. And they're being devalued on draft day on purpose, as they should, because, okay, let's say you missed 2 months of the season, 33% less production. That's a huge deal. At the same time, it's not as expensive as someone else who's just zero and then does it because you have the AL spot, et cetera. I would say that of these, the ones that I'm curious about most are Zach Wheeler and Grant Holmes. Grant Holmes only because there's a possibility that he doesn't actually miss that much time. And
because he says he's fine.
Yeah, because he said he's fine.
Right.
He's fully ready to go. And maybe I should have put this in the other one, miss all of 20 or not. Yeah, miss a lot of it and could be. It should be in the bottom one, healthy or spring unclear. Maybe. But anyway, the real estate broker said his stuff is playing better than before.
Of course he did.
He was a hipster, though, and I don't like hipsters. The other one that I will say I know midseason, he's going to become the talk of the town, And no, it's not Garrett Cole. No, it's not Jared Jones. It's Justin Steele. Because that is such a good Cubs defense. And what's interesting about a lot of these, Garrett Cole and Burns and Jones and Rodon, I throw in there too in this way, and Wheeler, velocity matters so much. Mm-hmm. But Justin Steele is not the kind of guy that relies on velocity.
Right.
He relies on feel and movement and playing into that Cubs defense. So that to me is more convincing of being productive sooner. And I imagine with the way the Cubs are being aggressive with hopefully winning a World Series, when Justin Steele returns, and we see this a lot with the Tommy John guys, they're actually able to go decently long quickly because they don't have a full season. So you're going to see that second half glory, right, that we've seen from other guys. And I think that Justin Steele can fall into that better than, say, like Corbin Burns, because Corbin Burns was weird. He's never going to get back the old cutter that used to have a ton of drop. Great, then you're just going to be fine. you know? And Justin Steele, I think, has a little bit more of a stability with what he actually does.
Yeah. The Garrett Cole thing is interesting because I first of all, like, he only threw 95 innings in 2024 as well. Was having some nerve issues. Important to know that, like, we think of Garrett Cole as like this high strikeout pitcher because for the vast majority of his career, he was. But in 2023, his strikeout rate dipped to 27%. However, he threw 209 innings, so he got you a lot of strikeouts. And then in 2024, his strikeout rate dipped again to just over 25%. So if Garrett Cole is a 27% strikeout rate arm, who's not going to throw 210 innings. We know that because he's starting the year hurt and they're not going to push him like they did before. That takes a lot of value out of Garrett Cole. Like, he no longer becomes a fantasy ace because, yeah, maybe you still get the, you know, the good ratios. I mean, you know, you're looking at a guy who's a career 318 ERA, you know, the last few years, eyeballing the math here, he's been probably like a 3.3 ERA pitcher over the last 4 years on average. So a 3.3 ERA pitcher with a 27% strikeout rate who is not going to go incredibly deep into games early on and isn't going to, you know, is going to come back in June. That is not, like, isn't that kind of like Brandon Woodruff-esque? Like, isn't Woodruff kind of like a 3-3, 3-4 pitcher with a 27% strikeout rate who we thought was going to come back in June and then and then didn't? But that's just my way of saying, like, I think Garrett Cole is going to be useful when he's on the mound, but this is not like, is Garrett Cole the first starting pitcher off the board or is Garrett Cole a top 10 starting pitcher? Like, right. I just don't think he's that dude anymore and you're going to miss a chunk of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be frank here. Yes, he's not that top 10 stud he used to be. I think entering 2024, we didn't really expect him to be that as we saw the decline in the fastball. And it was at 96 in 24 as opposed to like 97 plus that we'd seen in like 22. But still, as you mentioned, very productive for you. And really, like, having a 25% strikeout rate, ooh, I'll take that all day. Sure. From a guy coming back in the middle of the season. And if he replicates what he did in 2024 for half of it, of like a 3-4 ERA and a 1.13 whip or whatever, that's amazing.
Yes.
I'd love that. And maybe I'm underselling it with like Justin Steele versus Cole. I would rather have Garrett Cole. I'll be completely honest. I'm happy you brought up Cole for this. Now the question will be, what kind of pitcher is Garrett Cole truly when that fastball isn't as dominant? And we saw that a bit in 24, where the cutter had to become the 21% swing strike rate pitch against righties, and the four seamer was just an 8%. So the slider and the cutter had to do a ton more, but they did it. They were successful. The curveball also in there for 16% usage had a 38% CSW against righties. And then against the lefties, the four seamer still cooked, 13% swing strike rate there. And it was the main weapon. I mean, the cutter was getting more usage, 15% usage, good ICR. The curveball wasn't as effective. He wasn't able to, I remember this distinctly, gain that slider into the nitro zone against lefties as he used to underneath the barrel of the bat, right down and in. And that affects things a little bit. There is also a case to be made that for some guys, we see a slight uptick in velocity as opposed to a downtick from Tommy John. And that's because the season where they were last pitching, they were hurt a little bit. So right. We saw 95.9 essentially. So 96 on Gerrit Cole's fastball. Maybe we see 96.5 when he returns. Maybe it's a little bit more effective. Maybe he then doesn't feel so hesitant with his slider because maybe he felt a little bit of a tinge or something like that when he was throwing. He didn't say anything. I don't know. So I've actually talked myself into being more aggressive on Gerrit Cole and liking that more as a stash. However, I don't know where he's going to go in drafts. And it could be a case like it was last year where all of your IL stashes that came back halfway through were just either drafted at the beginning and then dropped. I would say, I mean, I wouldn't be stashing him and preventing myself from a roster spot in April. You know, if right. I had the IL spots and everything, you have to be disciplined with these IL guys. But yeah, he does seem like he probably is the best one of the lot here of guys that should return in June, July, and be productive through the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think because of the name and because it's the Yankees, my expectation is that Gerrit Cole is going to go higher than I am comfortable drafting him. But we'll see. I will just note on this list, you know that I have a weakness for Jared Jones. As of early January, the Pirates claim that he is on track with the 10 to 12 month time frame of the surgery and that there is a chance he is ready at the start of spring training. Now, I didn't include him here because I think the Pirates have no incentive to rush him into their starting rotation, not only because they have a full rotation, but because he is valuable to them. And so I think they're going to be cautious. And there's also some rumors that they may want to start him in the bullpen to like ease his workload in and then transition him back to the rotation. And so like, I don't really think he starts the year in their rotation, but I think there's a chance we see a pretty healthy Jared Jones in spring training. And that is going to be interesting to me because I was a fan of his. And I know that we both kind of agreed that he got out of the gates really hot in his rookie year. And I think maybe was pitching at a higher level than his true talent was because there are some current concerns about the fastball and the depth of the arsenal and all that kind of stuff. And he's going to be a full year, you know, without pitching. And so there's going to be some inconsistencies. And as we saw with Spencer Strider last year, guys who don't have a deep arsenal and rely on like the precise command of their pitches or the like really nasty movement on particular pitches like the slider that Jared Jones has, anything that is a slight regression in that makes them much easier to hit. So I don't think we're going to get that best version of Jared Jones, but like Jared Jones is a guy where like maybe we look up and it's June and he's fully in the rotation and is looking like 85% of the pitcher that we saw in the previous season. And depending on where he's going in drafts, like, that might not be a bad pick. And also, like, as I'm saying this out loud, I'm talking myself into the idea that, like, if they start him in the bullpen to start the year and he's throwing two or three innings at a time and looking pretty good, that's actually more valuable for you as, like, an end-of-bench stash than somebody who's just, like, going to pitch in the minor leagues and not come up until June.
Oh, sure. As if you're going to use a stash.
Right. Yeah. If you're saying like, hey, this is my end of bench stash. And it's like, I'm going to take Jared Jones as an end of bench stash. And either he's going to be in the minors until he's ready, or he's going to be throwing two or three innings out of the
rather than two, three innings. Yeah,
like,
sure.
You know, that actually has some value. Well, so there's a world where like a stash of Jared Jones winds up being a decent pick until he actually even gets in the rotation or gets fully healthy or however you want to.
I would think that if he's in the minors rehabbing and everything like that, something to two, three innings, then it would still be in your IL. So at least you'd save the roster spot at that point.
I guess so.
And I will, I do want to make very clear that I am very anti-stashing pitchers right now. Yes. Like if they're not in the rotation out of camp, just don't have them on your team.
Yeah.
And yes, you might miss out on Paul Skeens. But there is no Paul Skeens right now. He does not exist that we are doing this for at the moment. There are so many surprise prospect pitchers every year. It's why even when I do Dynasty podcasts, I always say, Do not overvalue the young guys who have not done it yet. Please don't, because there's always a Troy Melton that kind of appears in season or something like that they get really excited about or whatever. You know, it's, and the ones that are too big to fail, fail. So all the time. Oh gosh, all the time. Let me tell you about Jackson Job, huh? And so in Bubba Chandler coming up next year, last year. So anyway, it's, I love what you're saying about Jared Jones. I also do think that there is some potential in him actually getting consistency with a changeup. He threw it for strikes against lefties 10% of the time, but he threw it for strikes at the very least.
Right.
And when we saw Jared Jones 97 plus with about 7 feet of extension and 16 inches of vert and a super flat attack angle. And it's just like, this is such a good fastball. And oh my gosh, I really hope we get to see that just for the sake of like, it's so fun. And yeah, I do think that Jared Jones could develop those things, like become more than just a two pitch guy. Kind of like why I'm in on Chase Burns, because I think that he's not just going to be four seamer slider next year.
Sure. Yeah. Anybody else from this group that you feel like you want to say something about or?
Nah, I'm not going to buy in on DJ Harris because his fastball just was so weird before. Clark Schmidt eventually, sure. But like, you don't need to stash that. Max Meyer, we're not going to do this. Come on, come on. I can't, I cannot. And yeah, no. We're good.
Rodon, late May, right now is what we're hearing.
This is the perfect example, not a Tommy John thing, of like, there's an injury already. No, thank you. That's a weird one. And that's just, that's going to be weird. No, thanks.
Okay. Love to hear it. These are all guys who could be healthy in spring training, but they ended the year hurt, and we're just kind of like unclear about their situation. I'm going to list them all and then you can pick and choose, because there are some that I think, you know, we can talk through really quick and there are some that aren't, but I'm going to give you the full rundown of all of these names, but I'm actually going to do that after this break. So it's a long list here, but here are some names. Again, guys who we think will be healthy at the start of spring training, but we are unclear. Spencer Spellenbach, Pablo Lopez, Nathan Eovaldi, Shane Bieber, Brudruff, Chris Bubich, Spencer Arrighetti, Hunter Dobbins, Zach Eflin, Sawyer Gibson-Long, Reese Olson, Kodai Senga, who was technically kind of healthy at the end of last year, but pitching in the minors and battling injury, Jacob Lopez, and Patrick
who?
Sandoval.
The Irish Panda.
The Irish Panda. Where do you want to start here?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so welcome to the difficulty of ranking pitchers. This is unbelievable to us. And I will say there are some that I'm just instantly going to tell you I'm not interested in. Okay. So Patrick Sandoval, come on. I can't do this. Maybe he learns a cutter from your Red Sox guys eventually, but I can't do that. Kodai Senga is kind of interesting, but like he needs to be different and back to his like 2023 self for me to really get on board. I know he did well in the first half last year, but it was unsustainable in my view. I just wrote about Sawyer Gibson-Long and Reese Olson. And just this morning, as I did my Twitch stream for the Detroit Tigers, and I'm going to give you the quick take right now. It's not much, guys. Okay. Sawyer Gibson-Long, I think a lot of people are still counting him out completely, even though I was really in on him this time last year because I was come back from Tommy John, showed some elite skills in 2023, missed all of 2024, came back, wasn't quite there. And he looks to me like he's the SP7 for the Tigers right now. There's Drew Anderson as a number five. And there's also Reese Olson. I'll get to him in a second. But Sawyer Gibson-Long still has the elite extension. Wasn't able to get his sinker as low or his fastball as high as before. Still has excellent movement on the changeup and great movement on the slider. And I think there is really something here that I hope we see in the minors in the beginning of the year and then eventually shows up and is the starter that we want. But not someone I want in my draft. This is just someone to monitor. Reese Olson, I'm actually out on because I think there's understanding or at least expectation for Reese Olson to be this Holly type, to be like a 3.5 ERA with a 1.15 whip. And he also has like 24% strikeout rate. He's going six innings all the time. And looking at him, I see a fastball four-seamer that is really bad. And is acting as the foundational piece against left-handers, and it's just not good. You have a really good slider and changeup command. They're not innately like filthy themselves, but he uses them well enough. So I'm like, okay, fine. You throw that against both lefties and righties. Okay. But the sinker, he threw inside in 2024 And then he started to try and do backdoor to righties in 2025, moving away from Armstead. It was far worse. And I don't know if that's going to stick or not, but I don't like it. And I kind of see like, well, you need to figure out your fastballs better. The sinker itself is not a good movement pitch. He just needs to locate it properly. And when sometimes he does and doesn't. And without a good fastball against lefties, Rhys Olson's going to have this classic problem that we have all the time of like, yeah, you're going to allow too many hits to lefties and you're going to get hurt by them. And then you throw in the haze of, okay, he started his throwing program like December 12th or some or so. And we don't quite know what that means. And he didn't return to the end of last year like I normally want. And it was a shoulder strain, which we don't like to hear. And it's just, I'm good. The cap ceiling and a floor that is widening as I talk.
We don't like a floor that's widening as we talk. Spencer Spellemach is the one that I am most interested in. Yes. Fractured elbow.
Sounds terrible.
In what they called a freak accident, almost certainly linked to his increase in velocity.
Yeah, I mean, how could it not?
Right. Was pain-free and throwing by November. So should start the year healthy. I will say that, like, I probably would have had Spellemach ranked in the top 15 if he was just a fully healthy starting
yes.
pitcher.
Yes. So he just had a full season, you know, 32 right. starts straight, 100%.
So he's probably
might even be like my SP four or five, if you were. Right.
He's probably somewhere in like my late 30s or 40s or something like that, depending on how he looks in spring. Because again, he didn't pitch at all after he came back. I know the injury is a quote unquote freak accident that they're calling it, but if it's tied so closely to the velocity, does the velocity go down? Like, there's lots of questions. But I believe in the talent, and I think he's going to be healthy to start the year. Pablo Lopez and Nathan Eovaldi are both guys who the report was had their teams been playing meaningful games at the end of the season, they would have pitched.
Right.
And so I'm going to see how they look in spring, but I'm likely to approach them the same way that I would approach them normally. They were,
and one thing to note with these...
There was just no
sorry to interrupt you, Eric. One thing to note with Pablo Lopez and Ethan Eovaldi is that these are pitchers who their teams are going to throw in there right. as long as they're healthy, right? They're just going to go. They're not going to be baby. They're not going to be managed in the same way of others that we've been listed today, right? So there's a difference between Pablo Lopez, Nathan Eovaldi, and then say like Shane McClanahan for as many innings as we expect. Chris Bubich might be limited as we're about to talk about now, Eric. So just keep that in mind with those guys. I'm more encouraged to draft them because of that.
Yeah. Bubich, as you mentioned, it was a rotator cuff strain. It did not require surgery. But this is a guy who's never thrown over 130 innings in the big leagues. And that was in 2021. And so you factor in the injury history with the fact that he dealt with this rotator cuff strain. It didn't require surgery, which on one hand is great, but on another hand, we know that he just was like rehabbing it. And so you hope it's good. And so I'm just operating under the assumption that like Chris Bubich is like 110, 120 inning arm.
Yeah.
And I will, you know, if you're using projections, like I'll kind of rank it, I'll modify the projections to reflect that. And I would still draft him if he falls to me at the value that I believe is relevant for 110, 120 arm, 120 inning arm. It's not going to be super high. I cannot at this point in his career, he'll be 28 next year. I just can't bank on the fact that we're finally getting that 150, 160 inning season. And people may want to draft him at that because he looked really good in his 20 starts last year. I will draft him, but I can't draft him that high. Woodruff looked really good when he came back, and then he dealt with a lat strain and he missed the playoffs, and he should be in the rotation, but like, you know, we got shoulder surgery in 2023. The capsule thing. It cost him 2024. The injuries from last year don't bother me. The bruised elbow from getting hit with a line drive and the sprained ankle, like those things that delayed his return, like those don't matter to me in terms of him coming back. But a lat strain after the shoulder surgery, it's problematic. Even if he's healthy, maybe again, he's another guy where I'm like, hey, he's 110 inning starting pitcher. But if he's healthy at the start of the year, to your point, Woodruff has been so good that I would probably rather draft Woodruff late than draft a guy who's not going to come back until June. If Woodruff is healthy in spring,
yes.
Because I know that I'm probably going to get good production out of him to start the year. And then if and when that injury comes, I'll adjust and pick up a Jared Jones or, you know, pick up somebody who's on their way back or somebody who's emerging or something like that. I'd rather take a healthy Woodruff over waiting on somebody else. And honestly, frankly, like I'll probably take Woodruff over Grayson Rodriguez.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, I think that some people think Grayson Rodriguez is healthy and he is going to pitch 160, 170 innings or whatever. And he's young and he's got upside and all
that. No. I mean, Woodruff just came back into the 32% K rate, albeit with some ridiculous put away rates that are not going to be replicated. I was actually just looking him up a little bit more because it really does confound me. Of like, you look at this on paper of Brandon Woodruff's four seamer and okay, 17 inches of vert, but it's 93 with an average attack angle, 6.5 extension. How is it so good that it has a 23% swinging strike rate against righties?
Was like, that just last year?
Just last year.
Well,
and it was 20% in 2023. And I mean, I have an answer, but I'm curious to hear what yours is.
I mean, I have an answer too. And it's my stock standard go-to answer here. And it's, he added another fastball.
Ooh, interesting.
That was not the answer I was going to give you. In the years past. And he added a cutter and was throwing the cutter 16% of the time on the year. He threw the cutter 20% of the time to righties also. So it's not just a cutter that he was only throwing to lefties. So now right-handed hitters saw a sinker 38% of the time, a four-seam fastball 28% of the time, and a cutter 20% of the time. It's hard to differentiate when you're getting when you have to prepare for three fastball variations all coming at you with different movement. It's hard to figure that out. And I think it allows the four-seamer to play up a little bit more than it would have previously.
So the counter I can give to that is diffused a little because he went from 96 plus in the previous four seasons or so, and then he was 93 last year. That was Brandon Woodruff's four-seamer. But he did have a 20% swing strike rate in 2023. And the last time we saw him, and that was 11 games or so, without this cutter, the cutter had just appeared. I agree with you that the cutter is making a big impact, 89. Also, the movement profiles are actually kind of similar. So you're trying to prepare for this and that. You don't know exactly the timing you should get. One of the other significant things that Woodruff did is he saved, especially against right-handers, his four-seamer for two-strike counts. 55% of the two-seamers he threw were in two-strike counts all of a sudden, which is, that's pretty cool. And he made that adjustment in 2023 to 48%. Before that, it was like 42, 44 or so. But it is still just, it's wild. I mean, he didn't even have a high lock that is well. The average was like sub 40%.
But that's what I was actually going to say is that you look at it and it's like, okay, the high lock, which is high location. Yes. Normally you like a four seam fastball that's up in the zone. His high lock in 2023 was 55%. It was 40% last year, 39.5%.
Right.
So you're like, man, a 15% drop in high fastballs, like that's not good. And then it's like, wait, where does he throw his sinker? Oh, he throws his sinker low in the zone. He doesn't throw his sinker up. And he keeps his sinker, you know, inside-ish to right.
Yeah, I would say it's more like middle in.
He started using his sinker inside less in 2025, just moving it around the plate more. But I think the fastball plays better with the sinker when it's not exclusively upstairs, because he doesn't throw his sinker upstairs. And so I think now you have three fastball variations. You're no longer differentiating the fastball variations just by location. So they're coming at you into the same locations. And to your point, you're saving the four-seam fastball more in two strike counts. And I think that makes it a little bit more impactful.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I need to like cash you out of the office as she gets very insistent, this cat. The four-seamer had 100th percentile put away rate last year.
Yeah, that's not gonna carry.
Just want to put that out there for everybody. Okay, he did overperform last year, Brandon Woodruff. And also, you're completely right that this new cutter is great. It's a wonderful addition. We love it, and it does mix well with the four-seamer, also throwing a ton of strikes. You have the changeup against lefties. That's near 70% strikes, 19% swing strike rate. It's a good mix that I wish had a little bit more giddy up to it.
Sure.
And it wasn't at 93 doing it. But yes, I do see still a very productive pitcher. It's all about, okay, are you just pitching normally in spring or not? And I would say among these, Spencer Schwellenbach, Pablo Lopez are the two I have the most optimism for entering camp, as far as just like health and being fine. I would say Nathan Eovaldi's third. Shane Bieber didn't really talk about briefly, but like he's had a quote that was about his elbow hurting. Is that right, Eric?
I believe it was a forearm at the end of the year that was the exact term? He dealt with, this is from Mitch Bannon of The Athletic, posted in December, that why were people quote unquote baffled that Bieber picked up his $16 million option? And it's that he dealt with forearm fatigue at the end of the season. And so given, you and I were very high on Bieber. I think we both had him inside of our top 20, definitely top 25 prior to this coming out. And then it's just like, given all the arm injuries that he had, the fact that he was already dealing with a forearm issue, like it doesn't take, quote unquote, take him off my board, but I have no expectation of health for Shane Bieber.
Yeah.
So he's another guy where like, if he's healthy in spring and I feel like the cost is right for a pitcher that I might get 100 innings out of and front load those innings, if he's healthy in spring, like great. But I don't have the expectation that he's going to make it through the year. And so I'm no longer really optimistic about Shane Bieber. And, Kodai Senga for me, I guess, is somebody who I do have optimism for, because I think he was working back from injury at the end of last year. And so when he got sent to the minors because he was ineffective, I think that was just like him being ineffective after coming back from injury. And so I don't think, had the Mets not been in a full tailspin and potentially going to miss the postseason, I don't know that he would have been sent to the minors. Remember that he was dealing with a hamstring strain. It wasn't an arm issue. He had strained his hamstring in June, and he missed a lot of months because obviously hamstrings are important for pushing off and all that kind of stuff. But this wasn't an arm issue he was coming back from. It was just him trying to shake the rust. And we have discussed that he is there were some inconsistencies that he fixed. It seemed like he fixed in the second half of his first big league season. But I think that Kodai Senga, I'm like kind of willing to throw out last year. I think that Kodai Senga has the upside to be a strong starting pitcher. He's not coming back from an arm injury. He's going to be in that rotation. Frankly, they probably need him to frontline that rotation. And he was really good in 2023. And so, like, I don't know that I'm getting a sub-3 ERA like I got then, but even on the full year last year, like the full year, he had a 3.02 ERA in 113 and a third innings, and the strikeout rate dropped down to 22.6%. But like, you're going to, in your mind, be like, man, he really struggled at the end of the year. But that's added into the 302 ERA. So he was good when he was healthy for the vast majority of the season. And him not coming off an arm injury too, like, I don't know where, you know, we don't know where these guys are going to go draft wise.
Mm-hmm.
But if people are really apprehensive about Kodai Senga, I may have a decent amount of shares of Kodai Senga.
I think I can agree with that. Absolutely. The other one I would mention is Zach Eflin, who got back surgery finally. And he mentioned that every year it would happen once that he would be bothered by his back. And this is the first year it happened twice. So he finally got the surgery he's been wanting to get. And Zach Eflin is a very good command pitcher. And you're telling me that now he's addressed the thing that has bothered him a ton in a good situation in Baltimore where they're just going to run him out there. That seems pretty cool to me.
Yeah.
So I would not overlook that one. Spencer Arrighetti seems like he's more set back than we'd like. And Hunter Dobbins is kind of interesting in St. Louis. There is value there. And right. I hope that we will have a team defense and situation article out in the preseason so that you guys can get a sense of before the season even starts. Are the Cardinals going to be among the top five defenses or so? And you might be able to say, hold on a second. Maybe Hunter Dobbins actually can find his groove, because what we always thought with Hunter Dobbins was, you're good at things.
Right.
You know, nothing that leaves. Like, oh, that's good. And that does generally speak to a guy who can go 90 plus pitches and be fine, especially if you have a good situation. So don't count that out. And last but not least is Jacob Lopez, who I can't believe had such an unbelievable stretch of 13 starts last year. And I just don't want to throw that out the window.
But that home park is also probably.
That's all. I know, but he did with even the ballpark.
He did. Yeah, he did. You know. We should mention with Hunter Dobbins is Richard Fitz. They both came to St. Louis from the Red Sox. I think they're battling for the last spot in the rotation with Kyle Leahy because the Cardinals signed Dustin May. And so they have Matthew Liberatore and Dustin May and Andre Pallante and Michael McGreevy. Yeah. And so, like,
that's a long race.
Oh yeah, listen, I just mean
not Andrew Pallante in there, who's not. I just mean one that's going to deny a good Richard.
I will say this because it was my thought before I looked at their rotation that I was like, man, the Cardinals are bad. These two guys are locked into the rotation, and then I was like, oh, actually, maybe they're not locked into the rotation because, you know, they had to sign Dustin May, but whatever. Like, maybe, you know, maybe those guys aren't locked into spots. And so that makes it a little more problematic for me. Richard Fitz is the upside play because if things break right, he has more strikeout upside and there's a potential for the raw stuff to be better, but he is far riskier. The floor is higher for Hunter Dobbins to be just kind of like I spam the strike zone with five pitches and I'm going to get ground balls and you know, I'll be a decent starting pitcher, but the strikeouts aren't going to be there for fantasy. I don't love either of those guys. I don't love the situation there, obviously, as well. I don't think the Cardinals are going to be particularly good. And I agree with you on Eflin. I think Eflin has always been like rock solid and he's going to be healthy. And so I expect him to be solid and not spectacular.
I'm going to blow your mind right now.
Ooh,
Kyle Leahy is probably going to be in the rotation because he has zero options.
Who?
Kyle Leahy. Michael McGreevy and Pallante both.
But he pitched in the bullpen last year.
Could be in the bullpen. You're very much right there.
That's my thought.
McGreevy and Pallante both have an option left.
Yes.
And Liberatore does too, but come on. Come on. Right. He's the ace of the staff right now.
You can't take out your ace.
Oh my gosh. What is going on, St. Louis?
Yeah, I think Leahy could be moved to the bullpen. He's made one big league start and it was an opener. So I know he's in the road. I know he is like in the projected starting rotation
because there's no one else
started since 2022 in double A. So yeah, like, I don't really know why
right.
a guy who hasn't started since double A in 2022 would then join the MLB rotation in 2026. I don't see it personally.
Leahy is expected to open the 2026 season in the Cardinals rotation. Jeff Jones of Belleville news Democrat
report. Right, which you know means he's entering spring training with a chance to win a rotation spot.
Oh, I love you, Eric.
Right? Like, I just, but whatever. I mean, that's what they want to do. Good on you, Cardinals, projecting last in the NL Central right now.
Oh, man. As far as the skill set of both Dobbins and Richard Fitz, what we did see last year from Richard Fitz against righties in 45 innings was a 15% swing strike rate with that four-seamer at 96. A sweeper, 64% strike rate with a 24% swing strike rate, and a slider at three ticks harder at 88. That did well. In addition to that, and then against lefties is the problem. What do you throw? Is it the four seamer? Well, the four seamer can be effective at times, but right. Will he have the right command of it? It did generally up and away, but it was the low strike rate, just 62%. He needs a little bit more. And then the slider just kind of flipped in there, down and in, and it can be hit hard when he does that, as it was last year. So there's a little bit of a question mark there. There's a curveball as well. Not really an effective pitch for him against lefties. As far as Dobbins goes, I mean, I think this is a really interesting battle here. You have a fastball at 95, 96, but it's kind of empty velocity. On the steeper side, vert is 15, which isn't good. 6.4 extension, nothing to really report there. So against righties, what does he do? Well, it's a sub 10% swing strike rate for Hunter Dobbins' four-seamer. Massive ICR is up the roof. Off the roof, 61 innings worth of a sample last year, just to give you a reference point. But the curveball was a very effective pitch for him. Didn't allow a single bit of ideal contact, but it was only 4% usage.
Sure.
It was 36% usage on the slider, 63% strikes. Still got hit a little bit too more, more than you want. The sweeper wasn't commanded as you want either. And against lefties, that curveball did show up and was the best pitch for him. 21% usage. 64% strikes, 19% swing strike rate, weakest contact of the lot. And then we did see a splitter in there too. I know, don't get excited. What do you know? Not a strike pitch. Shocking, more at 11.
Shocking.
Okay. So I do wonder if the curveball will go up a little bit for Hunter Dobbins, and he's got to figure out something a little bit different than that four-seamer because it's just not very good. Ta-da.
Ta-da. And that's going to do it. Ta-da. We're kicking into high gear here. We got some prospect starting pitching discussions coming up. Nick and I are going to go through our, you know, early-ish rankings, talk about what's changed since November, where we're starting to see guys ranked. We got a lot of content coming to you. We're going to come to you at least once a week. Going to start getting into twice a week as we get into February. We're filling up your feeds. Make sure you got your downloads set. Just download the show every time. Just auto-download it. You don't have to worry about it. We're just there in your inbox.
And here's the thing.
You know what I mean?
Our schedule is we're going to talk about pitching prospects, as Eric talked about, because I'm going over all the teams, and I'm actually getting an extra step on prospects first. And then PitchCon arrives. And guess what happens at PitchCon? Eric is going to share with us something special.
Yeah, my top 100, my top 150.
Oh my gosh. We're going to have a great time doing that at PitchCon, which starts next week, January 29th. So cannot wait for that 4-day weekend. If you don't know PitchCon, we raise money for ALS causes, $10,000 every year. 100% of everything we make goes straight to it. PitchList doesn't take a dime of it. We've raised over $50,000 for charity since we started in 2020. And it's live streamed baseball presentations and panels for about 10 hours a day for 4 straight days. So go to twitch.tv/pitchlist to go watch it, or go to pitchlist.com/pitchcon. We'll be sharing more details about this later in the week and early next week. You can also win prizes. So come on by to PitchCon. It's a great time. And it's you'll get to see Eric Smolski's early top 150 starting pitchers. And after that, we're going to go 20 by 20 through my top whatever starting pitchers.
Top 600. We're going to...
I have a temptation just to make a 300 this year, but... We'll just see how many of these write-ups I have from all the teams, and we'll just shove them all together and see what we get.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it all. That's going to do it for today. I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I am Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to prepare for my incredible birthday party tomorrow.